Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 51, entitled The Deliverance of Muchukunda, Text Number 46. Labdva jano durlabha matra manusham katanchid avyangam ayatnato anga naga. Katanchid avyangam ayatnato naga. Padaravindam na bhajati asanmatir. Grihandakupe patito yatha pashu. Labdva jano durlabhamatra manusham. Katanchid avyangam ayatnato naga. Padaravindam na bhajati asanmatir. Grahandakupe patito yatha pashu. Labdva jano durlabham atra manusham. Katanchid avyangam ayatnato naga. Padaravindam na bhajati asanmati. Grahantakupe patito yatha pashu. Labdva, attaining, janaha, a person, durlabham, rarely obtained, atra, in this world, manusham, the human form of life, katanchet, somehow or other, ayangam, with undistorted limbs, unlike the various animal forms, ayatnatah, without endeavor, anaga, O sinless one, pada, your feet, aravindam, lotus-like, na bhajati, he does not worship, asat, impure, matihi, his mentality, Griha of home. Andha blind. Kupe in the well. Patitaha fallen. Yataha as. Pashuhu an animal. Translation. That person has an impure mind who, despite having somehow or other automatically obtained the rare and highly evolved human form of life, does not worship your lotus feet. Like an animal that has fallen into a blind well, such a person has fallen into the darkness of a material home. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Our real home is in the kingdom of God. Despite our tenacious determination to remain in our material home, death will rudely eject us from the theater of material affairs. To stay at home is not bad, nor is it bad to devote ourselves to our loved ones. But we must understand that our real home is eternal in the spiritual kingdom. The word ayatnataha indicates that the human life has been automatically awarded to us. We have not constructed our human bodies, and therefore we should not foolishly claim this body is mine. The human form of life is a gift of God and should be used to achieve the perfection of God consciousness. One who does not understand this is asanmati, possessed of dull, mundane understanding. Om agyanti mirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshuron militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasandubhyevacha Padidanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I'll read the translation again. That person has an impure mind who, despite having somehow or other automatically obtained the rare and highly evolved human form of life, does not worship your lotus feet. Like an animal that has fallen into a blind well, such a person has fallen into the darkness of a material home. Hare Krishna. First of all, I would like to seek blessings of all the assembled devotees so that I can speak something on this exalted subject matter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Here, there is a description of what are the definition of a person with an impure mind. So, somebody with an impure mind having to define that is itself a funny thing. But just for our purification and for having to do this service, we'll attempt something. So here we are in the section of Srimad Bhagavatam where Muchukunda is offering his prayers to Lord Krishna in a very interesting way. Generally, you're supposed to offer prayers, offer worship, offer your japa, offer your puja. After you have got up and had a bath and you're clean. And here is Muchukunda, fresh out of sleep, and offering prayers directly to Krishna. It's not even a the deity form of Krishna. It's not even connection with Krishna through the holy name. Here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead standing personally. Muchukunda doesn't have the time to even have a bath, doesn't have time to wear fresh clothes. Straight offering from his heart. So, and on top of that, he is talking about what is the sign of an impure mind. So, essentially, Muchukunda says that anybody who has, what are the signs of an impure mind? From his perspective, it is three things. First thing is that when a person has fortune and he wastes it, that is a sign of an impure mind. The second sign of an impure mind, according to Muchukunda, is that when there is higher evolution in the cycle of the evolution, higher evolution means higher purpose. When one does not recognize our higher evolution, that is a sign of an impure mind. And the third sign of an impure mind from Muchukunda's perspective is that when somebody is supposed to maintain a high standard, but instead he has a lower taste, that is a sign of an impure mind. So from Muchukunda's perspective, he is analyzing what it means to have an impure mind. And if you study from our perspective also, this is exactly what we are struggling with. We are struggling with having the fortune of, first of all, having birth in the land of India. More than that, having a human body. More than that, being connected to a process that is so highly evolved. And more than that, being in the association of devotees who are so exalted and elevated in their consciousness. And in spite of having all this fortune, I mean, most people, most living entities are not even having the first one, second one, third one, fourth one. You know, we are having all the four, and in spite of that, if we don't really take advantage of it, then we are just wasting it. That means that is a sign of an impure mind. The impure mind basically doesn't allow you to contemplate. The impure mind basically doesn't allow you to go beyond its basic needs. So the second sign of an impure mind is higher evolution means higher purpose. So human species is the most highly evolved species, and naturally it has to be oriented towards achieving the highest purpose. And in spite of having such a high standard that is recommended and required for us, if we have taste for the lower things, then we are having an impure mind basically. So, in the Bhagavatam, nothing happens without a reason. So we study this particular pastime. Can you imagine, Muchukunda is lying down over there for so many, God knows how many years. He's been lying down over there for such a long time. But why is he kicked so badly? I mean, from the law of karma perspective, from the from the whole understanding of whatever happens to us happens for a reason. The kick of Muchukunda, the kick that Muchukunda received, I mean, we can understand that Kalyavana had to die over there. But why did Muchukunda have to get kicked? You know? So apparently from our perspective, we study Kalyavana's reason, and we say Krishna brought Kalyavana over there so that he can die. But does it not make sense that Krishna brought Kalyavana over there so that Muchukunda can be woken up also? So if Muchukunda has been kicked by Kalyavana or by anybody for that matter, he is kicked for a reason also. And apparently that reason is something more relevant to us than the fact that Kalyavana kicked. So Muchukunda was kicked badly because at this point of time he wanted no seva but sleep. So whenever Krishna may use anybody to wake us up, to kick us and wake us up. So essentially from this perspective we see from our life also, there is a tendency to become lax, to become slackened down in our desire to serve, in our desire to practice our spiritual lives, in our desire to contribute towards society. So whenever there is a slack in our desire, the mode of ignorance takes over. And that is the time we need kicks like this. That is the time we need somebody to kick us. That is the time when we need Krishna's agents to come and kick us. And that is the time when we should actually aspire and pray for Krishna send somebody to kick us up and wake us up. So, the question is, generally, after one has executed an exhaustive project, an exhaustive service, the tendency is that we need a break. Tired. So, question is, do we really need a break from seva? If you see from the perspective of what the living entity's real nature is, Jivara Swarupahoy Krishnera Nitya Das. So the eternal nature of the living entity is to serve Krishna. Where is the question of break? So whenever there is an aspiration for break from service, that is when some kick comes into our life. So the nature of the soul is to be a das, to be a servant. And when we ask for a break from seva, that means we are saying, please give me a break from being a servant, I want to be a master for some time. Even if it means to be a master of sleep. So essentially, when one is sleeping, when one is in a state of lax, or when one is in a state of inertia, then it apparently feels that there is no boss there. There is nobody who is a master over there, you know. In sleep, I am the master. At least nobody is there. I am not a das at that point of time. But the fact is that we cannot avoid but be a das. Because we may not be a das to somebody, some devotee, but we are definitely a das to our mind. For me, whenever I go to sleep, my mind is constantly active. So many dreams, so many weird imaginations going on in the mind. So, isn't it a fact that even in the dream, the mind is bossing over us? So essentially, the fact is that whether we accept it or no, we are eternally, constitutionally das. We can choose to be Krishna das, or we can choose to be the das of the mind. But we cannot avoid it. So here, Muchukunda, apparently, he wanted a break from his service. And Krishna, I mean, he got quite a big break. And Krishna felt it is time to wake up from the slumber. Krishna felt it is time to wake up and get into some active role of doing his devotional service. So, the sign of a pure mind from Muchukunda's perspective in this prayer, Muchukunda is saying that the sign of a pure mind is in absorption in Krishna. As long as there is absorption in Krishna, till that point of time, the mind is pure. That means, to the degree to which we are absorbed, to that degree and to that extent, the mind remains pure. And the moment our absorption goes down, there is some impurity that creeps into our mind. So the whole concept of vandanam or prayers, which is the sixth process of devotional service, is a process that actually helps us purify our mind. Because it helps us in tangibly being absorbed in Krishna. I remember in my childhood, one of the times that I would feel nice is before going to bed, my grandmother would always tell me stories. And every time she would finish the stories, she would always end with some prayer to Krishna, to the Lord. So those prayers, I remember, you know, it used to give me a very comfortable feeling. So in childhood, definitely all of us would have experienced the comfort of, you know, taking shelter of prayers. The same comfort you can experience as we grow up now, if any of you all have experienced this, while we are chanting mantras, while we are chanting the verses from the Bhagavatam, while we are chanting the morning prayers, you know, when we are all together in a mood of prayer and absorption in Krishna, it's a very comforting feeling. It's a feeling where at least for that temporary few moments, we don't experience the crazy material pull, you know, and the crazy weird thoughts that come into the mind. So essentially, the power of prayers is always there. There are many stories like this in the Puranas, where demons would try to attack the sages, and whenever demons would attack the sages, they would try to come down and destroy the yajna, destroy the fire sacrifice and all that. But because the sages are chanting powerful mantras, the demons could not touch the ground. They would be like hovering around in the air and trying to, you know, attack the sages. So essentially, the power of mantras is always there. What does it, in this particular situation, what does it indicate? When demons are trying to come down and attack the sages, through their negative vibrations, the sages are counter-attacking the demons by their positive vibrations. So when you pray, when you utter mantras, when you actually take shelter of the Lord through the process of Vandanam, this is a powerful way to counter-attack the negative elements that are trying to jump into our lives. So, and prayer is a communication that supersedes all material situations or all material circumstances. Like, for example, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find prayers offered in distress. Gajendra, he offered his prayers in the greatest amount of distress. Now, why was Krishna attracted to Gajendra? If you think it from this perspective, we know the story. But if you think from this perspective, why was Krishna attracted to Gajendra? Was he attracted to Gajendra because elephant is spring? You know, elephant, whatever he does, you know, he jumps on a ball, people are attracted to it. If the elephant, if you travel around to holy places, you'll find people just hanging around an elephant, you know. Whatever the elephant does, the people are impressed. It breaks some big tree trunk, they're impressed. It eats a coconut as it is with a shell, they're impressed. Whatever the elephant does, they're impressed. So here, apparently, does it seem that elephant is offering prayers? So Krishna said, let's go and watch this, you know, it's something new. Or is it because Gajendra was offering prayers that were glorifying Krishna that Krishna got attracted? All these definitely may be reasons. But the most important reason is that the prayers that Gajendra uttered at this point of time, actually this is the crux of what prayers are meant for. So the prayers that Gajendra uttered at this point of time were prayers that were uttered with pure realization. So when he was chanting those prayers, when you are offering those prayers to Krishna, he was offering every word of those prayers with absolute pure realization of those words. So, at this point of time when Gajendra was offering those prayers, he realized, he didn't understand, he realized, he didn't know, he realized. He realized the fact that all his temporary roles that he was performing are all finished. And in that mood he was uttering those prayers. Most of the time when we pray, we keep the temporary roles that we play in the center. And then we utter our prayers. And therefore those prayers can never attract Krishna because our temporary roles are coming in between. In this state of helplessness that Gajendra was praying, Gajendra was offering his prayers, he kept aside all his temporary roles. He realized that none of his temporary roles are actually functioning here. And none of his temporary roles he can actually depend on. The fact that he is a king, useless. The fact that he is a husband, useless. The fact that he has the strength of 10,000 elephants, useless. The fact that he has unlimited wealth, useless. The fact that he had so many children, useless. The fact that he had hundreds of followers, useless. The fact that he had skills, abilities, powers, all useless. So when all the temporary roles that he was playing became useless, and he realized that all of them are gone forever, that's when he shifted to his permanent role as a servant of Krishna, and then he offered his prayers. So essentially, Gajendra, he did not know these prayers, but he actually felt these prayers. So there is a big difference between knowing prayers and feeling those prayers. When we offer prayers that the acharyas have spoken, Muchukunda has spoken over here, you know, we will be able to learn all these prayers by heart. We will be able to offer the prayers exactly word to word, verbatim. But can we feel what these people are actually feeling? Can we feel what they are actually experiencing? If we can do that, that's the realization which Krishna is expecting. So, sometimes, one type of prayers is prayer which is offered out of distress. But another type of prayer is result-oriented prayers. So sometimes, we experience so many losses in life. And when we experience losses, we don't see the silver lining that is, there within those losses. So most of the times, when we go through losses in our life, when we go through calamities in our life, there is a small silver lining that explains Krishna's intelligence in giving us those losses, in making us go through those losses. I know people who have bad experiences in life. And when people go through bad experiences, they just cannot fathom, this cannot be grateful to what they're going through. Just imagine having the loss of a child. Just imagine somebody going through a fatal disease. Just imagine some unpredictable misery comes into one's life. So when one goes through all these phases, it is most easy to see, to blame it on Krishna. So it's very hard not to let the seed of anger and doubt creep in. And this seed of anger and doubt, it starts affecting our relationship with Krishna. It starts affecting the way we see Krishna. And it almost seems that Krishna is destroying systematically all that we love. All the things that we love in this world, Krishna is systematically destroying them. It almost feels that Krishna doesn't love us at all. It almost feels that Krishna is plotting against us. So I know many people who go through negative phases in their life, they actually say that. It looks like Krishna's whole energy is coming and plotting against us only. So here, apparently, that may be the exact reason why Krishna is doing that to us. So we love things of this world so much that Krishna may sometimes have to do these things just to shake us up and tell us, come on, don't have so much love for things of this world only. So apparently, love in its most pure form is meant only for Krishna. So God may bring us to realize this through a tragedy. So in Muchukunda's life, if you see, you can just see this exact same situation happening through the whole pastime, the whole life of Muchukunda in one moment. Muchukunda, he lost everything he loved. Why? He went to serve the demigods. Everything he loved, everything he had, everything he possessed in this material world, all gone in one moment. In those few moments that he spent in the heavenly planets fighting for the demigods, doing some service for the sake of the gods, he lost everything he loved. So, apparently, one of the reasons he wanted to sleep was because he was exhausted. But apparently another reason that he wanted to sleep also could be the fact that he wanted to forget all those miseries of loss. So much loss that he went through in those few moments. One very safe way to forget all those losses that one goes through is to go to sleep. That means you fill yourself with so much ignorance. You fill yourself with so much, absorption in the mode of ignorance, that you forget whatever you go through. If you see in this world, when people go through losses in their life, what do? They go and drink, they go and take drugs, they go and apparently get into the mode of ignorance. Because apparently the mode of goodness and the mode of ignorance are very similar. In the sense that, in both the sides, you don't get affected by losses and gains. In the mode of ignorance, full mode of ignorance, kuch bhi farak nahi padta hai. No difference at all. Why? There's no intelligence active. You dull the intelligence so much that you apparently don't see any misery. So here in Muchukunda's case, all the losses that he went through, he just slept, forgot everything that he lost, and forgot everything that he gained. So apparently, Krishna woke him up to realize the fact that true love is available still. So when we try to seek that love through the temporary things of this world, when we try to seek that love through the material aspects of life, and when that thing is taken away from us, then we say, I have lost everything. I have nothing left to live for. I have nothing left to gain anymore. And then you get in the mode of ignorance. And that's when devotees interfere into our life and tell us, come on, that's not what real love is. That's not what the purpose of life is. And that's not the only thing that is available in life. The true love is still existing. And Krishna woke him up to realize that true love is still available. And Krishna's entry into his life apparently was through the instrument of Kalayavana. That means Krishna can use anybody as an instrument to wake our love for him. Apparently, you find so many times in devotees' lives, somebody who is absolutely disconnected to Krishna can give us the greatest realizations and wake our love for Krishna, right? I mean, all of us have our own experiences of how somebody brought us into the Hare Krishna movement. That person has no love for Krishna and neither he has any connection to Krishna at all. But he got us in the right place and walked away. So here, all the losses that Muchukunda was he faced was oriented towards waking him up permanently to his eternal gain, permanently towards his true identity. So all the losses that Muchukunda faced were oriented towards this one thing, waking up his permanent love for Krishna. So if you study the stories of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Kunti Maharani's prayers, if you study her prayers, that's filled with the exact same mood. Kunti Maharani, she went through unlimited loss at this point of time. Practically everybody in her dynasty except her 5 sons destroyed. Grandsons dead, her, from her husband's side, practically every relative that was there dead, in-law's side, practically everyone that she could connect with, all dead. All she was left was with her 5 sons. And the two, those 5 sons, whatever throne they were left with, was also not a joy-filled throne. That also was a throne that was filled with so much bloodshed. So apparently, Kunti Maharani, from her perspective, when she was faced through so much loss, she didn't become despondent. But she realized that all that loss is orienting me towards one gain. And that is Krishna. Therefore she prayed, "My dear Lord, let my mind flow towards your lotus feet, like just like the Ganges flows towards the ocean." So here, from this perspective, what is the meaning of prayer? Prayer essentially is not the language of words, but the language of the heart. When your heart is actually yearning for Krishna, when the heart is actually yearning to connect with Krishna in this way, that's what real prayer means. So, the most beautiful prayers without this feeling have actually no meaning for Krishna. So, from Krishna's perspective, Krishna is not searching for meaning in words, but Krishna is searching for meaning in intentions. So, in our context, we may search for meaning in words, and some prayers may be very meaningful and we may love them, and some prayers may not be so meaningful, we may not love them. But from Krishna's perspective, words don't matter. What matters is the intention. So, Krishna was orienting Muchukunda towards offering such prayers. And, he was offering such prayers with the deepest of understandings. Muchukunda, in this mood, he is saying, "Grihamanda Koopam." This material world or material life is like a deep dark well. Apparently, he is resonating the mood of Prahlad Maharaj here. And, Why is Shukadeva Goswami giving this explanation to Parikshit? Apparently, Parikshit Maharaj, from this perspective, he's saying, when you say Grihanda Koopam, he can connect with it very strongly because he is a Grihastha. He understands that he is a family man. And such an example of the family life being a deep dark well is something that Parikshit Maharaj can connect with also. So can Muchukunda, because he is also a family man. But apparently from our perspective, even those who are not in the family life, who are in the Brahmacharya ashram, for them also, the whole concept of Grihamanda Koopam is also there. From what is the meaning of this whole concept of Grihamanda Koopam? When one focuses on the material aspect of living, it's a deep dark well. Whatever it is. Whether it is a Grihastha ashram or it is a Brahmacharya ashram, when the focus is not on the higher aspects but on the lower aspects of life, it becomes a deep dark well. So it becomes like a negative spiral that goes lower and lower and lower. Apparently we may feel that we are moving very fast, but moving in which direction very fast? Is our spiral going upwards or our spiral going downwards? So the more we are oriented towards the pleasure seeking aspect of life, the more we are going into the andhakupam, the blind well, going lower and lower and lower. Somebody said that safety is ensured only in crooked roads. Straight roads are too dangerous. If you actually see, you know, life, most of the accidents happen on highways. Straight. No diversion, nothing. Straight road and so many accidents. You know, I recently saw a truck. It was a huge tanker. Huge, probably the size of this room. And this whole tanker had gone, it had flipped over the, you know, the divider. It twisted completely. It was a straight road, highway. There was apparently no possibility of a tanker, you know, getting twisted like that on a highway. I understand if it is a crooked road, you know, the tanker is so long, you know, it might, something might happen and it might fall. But on a highway? So essentially, difficult situations are needed to keep us awake. So if you think that we have learned everything and, you know, now life is going very smooth, very predictable. I know that I am, you know, I'm in the Brahmacharya Ashram. Now I'll go this, I'll do this, I'll do this, I'll do this. Everything is smooth road till the end. So apparently, when we think that we learned everything, that is a venom. That is a poison. And that is a poison which will lead to accidents. As long as we are in the learner mode, to that level, to that extent, we are in the safety mode. And as long as we feel that we have assimilated everything, learned everything, accepted everything, understood everything, immediately danger starts. So, Muchukunda in this prayer, the disciples of Prabhupada in this purport, they are offering this very interesting angle to this prayer of Muchukunda. They are saying, our real home is the kingdom of God. Despite our tenacious determination to remain in our material home, death will rudely eject us. So essentially, here, the theme that comes out is that our real home is a spiritual world. Muchukunda had a home in the material world. And then he was called to the heavens to perform his role, to assist the demigods. So he had a temporary home in the heavenly planets. And then he came back to the material world, his, whatever home he had, was lost. So now Muchukunda didn't know where to go. He is not supposed to stay in the heavens because he is not fully accepted in the heavens. He can't go back to his world because his world is not there only. Everything is gone. So he decided to make his cave as a home. And he slept in that cave. Essentially, whether it is a cave, whether it is a palace, whether it is a heavenly place, none of that is our real home. Our real home is in the spiritual world. And therefore, I remember in my younger days, I had seen one movie. I think it was a Tamil movie. This is a movie about an absent-minded professor. And this professor was so absent-minded, you know, that he would forget everything. One day he went into somebody else's house and he sat inside, you know, and he asked, you know, bring me tea. And one lady came and asked him, who are you? And this man really became angry on her. He said, how dare you come in my house? Where is my wife? And he started really abusing her like anything. So apparently sometimes, you know, we end up in situations like this. I remember many years back I heard this story, a very interesting story. I don't know if it is true or not, but it's at least fantastic, you know. So devotees sometimes come up with such fantastic stories. I don't know how they get these stories. So one time there was a man who was traveling in some train, and when he was sitting, one suitcase fell from top on his head, and he lost his memory, completely lost his memory, you know. And he got down in the station, he didn't know where to go and where not to go. And, you know, that time he met some book distributor. And this fellow was asking question, who am I? Where am I going? What am I supposed to be doing? And the book distributor thought he was a philosopher, asking philosophical doubts.
And he really inspired him to, you know, yeah, he said, you are an eternal spirit soul, servant of Krishna. And your home is spiritual world, and he took him to ISKCON temple, you know. And this man, he got convinced, because he was a blank slate, you know. And he became a devotee, he started living in the temple, and, you know, he was really absorbed in seva and chanting and all that. After many years, one day he was, you know, cutting vegetables in the kitchen, a rack of potatoes fell on his head. And he got up and he got back his memory. And he said, what am I doing over here? You know, what is this dhoti kurta, shaven head, you know. He's supposed to be a banker and all that. So then he asked people around what happened, you know. They said, you are living here for 6 months. And then of course he went back to his real, whatever his home was, real, temporary, I don't know. He went back to his home, but he continued practicing his spiritual life. I don't know whether this story is authentic, true or false, but essentially the story makes sense. Because from Muchukunda's perspective also, that kick was a reminder. He was kicked back to the reality of life. He was kicked back to the real home that he really belongs to. He was seeking out for whatever comforts, whatever pleasures in, you know, the earthly planet, the heavenly planet, inside that cave. But none of that really satisfied him. When he actually got that kick and Krishna came in front of him, that's when he realized that my true home is somewhere else. And he wanted to get connected. And here, Prabhupada's disciples are mentioning that death will rudely eject us from the theater of material affairs. So it's a very interesting analogy. You know? Death will eject us from the theater of material affairs. This analogy makes sense, especially considering the fact that everybody wants to become a hero here. Everyone is aspiring and desperate to become a hero. Muchukunda was a hero for the demigods. He was a hero for the people in the earth. He was a hero everywhere he went. Why he was a hero? He was a hero because of his skills, because of his abilities, because of his talents. So essentially, from this perspective, every person who has something is a hero. Or is aspiring to be a hero. Prabhupada would give this example of this donkey, you know, who was carrying the deities of Radha Krishna on his back and walking. And everybody was worshipping him, throwing colors, throwing flowers, and the donkey would shake his head. You know, thinking that, just see how people are worshipping me so much. And as soon as the deity was taken off, the master would give him 2 kicks and send him ahead, you know. So essentially, no one worships us ever. What they essentially worship us is that they bow down to the God-gifted unique qualities that are there in us. Nobody bows to us. Nobody worships us. If anybody worships us or anybody bows down to us, they bow down to that aspect that God has given us, which is unique in us. So it is essentially the qualities of God that manifest through us that really people respect and worship. And here, Muchukunda, when he is living in this particular cave, he is realizing this fact that life is temporary. And all the skills and achievements we have eventually go away at some point of time. What is important is how stably we are grounded. When you look at a house, nobody looks at the stability of the roof. You look at the stability of the walls. However stable the roof is, if the walls are unstable, there's no point. The roof is going to collapse in some time. Similarly, all the high qualities that you may have may be great to look at, but how grounded you are, that actually determines how long those high qualities will stand on you or will sustain on you. So, Muchukunda's prayer here is reminding us, in glory, legs must be grounded in remembrance of God. When there is glory, when there is good qualities, the legs have to be grounded in remembrance of God. And as long as there is remembrance of God, till then, things will be worth it. So, the gifts that we have, the human body, it should be valued and not thrown in a garbage can. So, there are 2 ways to see life. One way to see life is, if things happen as per our desire, then it is Krishna's grace, Krishna Kripa. But if things happen against our desire, it is Krishna's will, Krishna Iccha. So, the difference between Hari Kripa and Hari Iccha is that whenever you see things happening in your life which are as per our desire Then you consider this to be Hari Kripa, you know, Krishna's grace on us. And when you think, when you see that things are happening not according to our desire, then you think that it is Krishna's will or Hari Ichcha. But a better way to see everything that happens in life, whether it happens through our desire or whether it is doesn't happen through our desire, whether it is against our desire or whether it is supporting our desire, it is best to see everything as Krishna's grace. If you can see everything that happens in our life as Krishna's grace, then that canopy of grace will, you know, encompass our life. Through miseries, through exploitation, through happiness, through distress, through whatever. So essentially, Muchukunda was tired of seva here. The reason he was tired of seva, because he was loaded with expectation. And whenever there is a load of expectation, there is exhaustion also. So here, Muchukunda now is trying to see the whole thing from the perspective of how everything that happens in our life is Krishna's grace. And when he sees Krishna's grace manifesting in our life, he has no complaints anymore left. So, thank you very much. I hope whatever I spoke was something that made sense to all of y'all. And more than anything else, I pray that I follow what I spoke. And if there is any mistake or, you know, something that I spoke which I shouldn't, please forgive me. Thank you very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.